Blog Talk Radio.
Darn right it is. Ooh, that is scary. Welcome. Good evening. Come on in. Even though you couldn't hear the door, I oiled it earlier, which I should never have done. That's right. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. You're along with?
The other guy, Dave Binkley from Witness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And there's this other guy here just kind of floating beside me, Dale. I don't know what that's all about.
It's the ghost of Gar, I guess. I don't know. Unfortunately, he won't be with us. But only for the night. He will be back.
Only for the night, yes.
Trust in Gar. Thanks for signing in early here in the chat. Fogs being GGSI paper. Good old Bob listening live and chatting with us as we prepare to give you stories that are mostly ghostly.
Mostly ghostly. I like that. Mostly ghostly.
Mostly ghostly. Because, you know, Dave and I are your hosts with the most ghosts on the North Coast.
And that's no boast.
No, I've been practicing. Except like, I needed you to help me finish. Thank you. don't even remember this crap I wrote. All right. Three thrillers, all ghost stories tonight. Hey, we're getting close to Halloween season, and we're plotting and scheming already, folks. Plotting and scheming already. But tonight, it's what? Weird Circle, Inner Sanctum, and The Clock.
Yes. Yep, that's true. Of course, Inner Sanctum is a good standby here. And as is The Weird Circle, which is an interesting tale with usually very little to no music and sound effects. It's all done basically with the actors, their voices, and the stories. And there's usually classic stories as well. And then there's The Clock. I think we've had one or two of these, but not too many.
Another, it's good to have them back. It's good to have them back.
Yes, it is. With another ghostly tale here, as almost as scary as the story I told my wife the other night. No, wait, I can't go that.
Anyway, man, that could be private. And so we're your ghostly hosts. I know you can see right through us.
Absolutely.
As we try to present ourselves as entertaining. oh, my. It's going to be fun tonight.
We could try.
In Gar's stead, I have had coffee, so beware. No way I'll be as wild, but maybe I might just lose my mind a little bit. As we scare up some really good tales tonight.
Hey, we even scared up a sponsor for later on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cereal time, kids. It'll be cereal time.
But yes, so we're our best goes out to Brother Gar and hope that he'll be feeling up to doing his horror with Star Guard the Ghoul tomorrow. If not, he will be doing a rerun, but he's hoping to be able to do his show. So,
yep, and we're hoping for him too because he loves doing it as much as you love watching Gar the Ghoul.
Yep. But yes, we got the three ghostly tales here. Where do you think we should start off, Dale?
Oh, gosh. How about some Weird Circle just to get things
I was
going to
say, that was
kind of going.
Chronologically, that'd be the first one that we had tonight. Good old Weird Circle is, I think it was a transcription series from NBC, which was aired and then syndicated out to a lot of stations, basically whoever they would do it with, the sliding scale rates depending upon their listening audience.
And, hey,
you know, it, for that'd be like playing chutes and ladders, you know, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. No, so that's how they got them into other markets, right?
Right,
by
right.
transcribing and, them and then shooting them out. To
right,
because
you couldn't charge, a place in a small station in Kansas the same thing you'd be charging New York or Los Angeles. You know, just
right.
It doesn't make sense. Two, they couldn't afford it, but they can afford it on that sliding scale depending upon your listenership.
There you go. And Weird Circle, this one's called The Ghost Touch.
And it is from September 17th of 1940 and 4.
Ooh. Out of the past, phantoms of a world gone by, speak again the immortal tale, The Ghost's Touch.
Is it true that when you are very close to death, the dead are really able to reach out to protect you? I don't know, but Ralph Vant and I had been married only a few months when he died. We had been so completely and deeply in love that the memory of the happiness we had found is a thing which will always dominate my life. Well, John Stevens, one of Ralph's best friends, had invited me to spend some time with him on the coast where he had a large house. It was in the town where I had first met Ralph. Mrs. Stewart, my housekeeper and companion, went with me, and Paul Weston, another of Ralph's closest friends, was also there. But he lived in his own house nearby. I had been enjoying my stay there immensely. John had not been with us much, but Mrs. Stewart and I enjoyed the park and the beach. John had been particularly careful about my food, a fact which greatly pleased me. One morning, Mrs. Stewart and I had just returned from the beach. We were standing in the great front hall of the house when she brought up something I know had been on both our minds ever since we'd arrived.
My, it's quiet in this big old house.
Hasn't it been quiet, Mrs. Stewart? You know, I can remember when this was one of the liveliest houses in St. Anne's. And John was one of the jolliest men alive.
Sort of gives me the willies, Mrs. Zant. Something kind of brooding here. No one ever around this part of the house. The servants are all way off in the back there.
Does that seem strange to you? You know, I thought that maybe I was just disappointed, comparing it with the way I remembered it when Ralph and I were here together.
Oh, no, ma'am. There's something funny here. You mark my words. I didn't want to say nothing, hoping not to worry you. But Mr. John has acted so strange, too.
He's a lot more thoughtful than he ever was before.
And then, there's that funny smell.
Yes, I've smelled that, too. But I thought it was just my imagination.
And the strange way Mr. John looks at you after breakfast, when he gets up so solemn-like and goes up into that room at the head of the stairs. He never comes out again till dinner. What's in that room anyway, Mrs. Zant?
Well, I don't know. It's study of some sort, I guess, where John's doing some work.
You know, yesterday I got hunting for that smell, and I traced it right to that door. I sniffed all around there and tried to decide what it was. I heard something in there, too.
What?
Mr. John was in there. I could hear him muttering to himself. No words, mind you, just muttering. And every once in a while it sounded as though he was stirring something in the glass. Finally, guess what he said.
Oh, Mrs. Stewart, I think you've been imagining things. We're letting ourselves get nervous over something that's probably nothing at all.
Well, he said, at last. Now I'm certain this'll work. And just then he came toward the door, so I ran back to my room and shut the door.
Well, I don't think he'd mind if we went and paid him a visit. Then we can see what he's doing. I wonder if he's up there now.
Oh, my goodness, that startled me.
He's at the front door.
Why, it's Mr. Paul. I can see him through the glass in the door. I'll just let him in. It takes these servants here so long to get from way back where they are.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Stewart. Is Mrs. Zant here?
Hello, Paul. Come on in.
Oh. Why, Dorothy, what are you standing there like that for? You look worried, and as though you're just about to do something about it.
Well, Paul, as a matter of fact, we were just going up to pay John a visit in his study. There at the head of the stairs.
Study? Why, Dorothy, didn't he tell you what that is?
No.
That's a laboratory, and he's forbidden everyone to come in there, practically on pain of death.
Well, he hasn't forbidden me, and I'm going to find out what goes on in there. I think that was a little mean of him.
Oh, Mrs. Sand, do you think you'd better?
Certainly I do, and I'm going up now.
Well, I might as well get hung for a sheep as a lamb. I'll come along, too. Come on, Mrs. Stewart.
Well, you aren't frightened, are you, Mrs. Stewart?
There's no telling what we may find.
Well, it can't be too awful. John's no demon, anyway.
No answer. Maybe he's gone out. I'm going to look and see.
Be careful, Mrs. Ant.
Get out. I told you.
Oh,
Dorothy, come in. I didn't realize it was you.
Well, we're all here, John. We came up to pay you a little visit.
Fine, fine. Come on in, but shut the door. Hello, Paul. When did you arrive?
Just came in. Dorothy said she wanted to come up here. I told her we'd all been forbidden, but she insisted, so my curiosity got the better of me, too.
Well, that's fine. I'm really glad you did. This is a good day for me.
This is really magnificent.
Yes, Dorothy. What do you think of my private domain?
Well, if it's big enough, I'll say that for it. It's a little frightening.
Yeah, don't smell so good to me either.
Mrs. Stewart doesn't understand experiments the way we do, does she, Dorothy?
No, I don't, Mr. John. After seeing Mrs. Zant fooling with them dangerous chemicals, I don't know as I want to either.
Oh.
What's that, Dorothy? You?
Why, yes, Paul, I've been doing some experiments. Just for fun, mostly, but it does take up my time since I'm alone so much. That's why I think it was so unfair of John not to tell me he had such a wonderful laboratory here.
Well, Dorothy, I've been saving that for later, until this experiment is well underway. I've been hoping we might work together very soon.
John, what are those tables over there? They look like...
They're dissecting tables? Yes, that's what they are.
Well, of course, if you're going in for anatomy on the side, I'm afraid you'll leave me way behind.
Why, no, my dear, quite the contrary. I had hoped you'd follow right along. I'm sure you will with this new experiment.
Well, you've got to tell us now what this experiment is. You've certainly got our curiosity aroused.
Now, I'll tell you, of course. I have finally developed a new formula. This is the chemical part, which will eventually make a subject absolutely impervious to pain. That is, I will be able to operate without the use of anesthetics. Perform any sort of operation I wish.
How does it work?
I feed small doses of a certain formula, a very dangerous one, by the way, to the patient's in his food. Dangerous because while he's taking them, the patient occasionally falls into semi-conscious states in which he is very close to death. Then, when a certain stage is reached, there is one more dose which the patient must drink straight without any other food. Then the subject becomes unconscious of any pain whatever.
But what's the purpose of that? Surely the development of anesthetics.
But this, you see, leaves the scientists free to operate on conscious living animals without the stopping of some functions brought on by anesthetics. And this never wears off.
Have you ever tried it?
Several times, my dear, and with success. I am just waiting now to try my greatest experiment of the lot. To use my formula on the most complicated of living organisms, the human.
But, John, you're not going to go on with this, are you?
Well, certainly. Why should I stop now? Especially when I'm so near the final experiment.
Do you mind, John, if Mrs. Stewart and I go down to the beach? I'm afraid the air in here has made me a little dizzy.
That's a good idea, Dorothy. We'll come right along to walk with you.
By all means, go ahead. Do get plenty of fresh air, my dear. I hope you'll see more of the laboratory later. Much more.
I wondered then what it was in John's look that startled me. Or was it something in his voice? A chill of apprehension made me turn and hurry ahead of Mrs. Stewart out into the cool seashore air. I was sure that John was telling me something, saying something to me alone. And I was afraid even then to let myself believe what I thought it was. Mrs. Stewart and I walked through the little park that lay between the house and the beach. It was a place of many wonderful memories to me, the place where Ralph had first kissed me. We passed the tree where Ralph and I had stood that day, and Mrs. Stewart, bless her, knew what I felt as we came to the spot. She looked at me.
These memories aren't going to spoil your visit now, are they, Mrs. Ant? You know, there's a lot of things a person has to live with all her life.
Oh, no, Mrs. Stewart. My memories of him wouldn't spoil anything. They're too beautiful.
Well, I just thought from the way you were looking over at that tree, the one...
You know, I'm going over and touch that tree. Just for luck. I feel as though I need some luck right now.
Mrs. Ant. Mrs. Ant. What's wrong? What are you looking like that for? As though you'd seen a ghost.
Oh, Mrs. Stewart, Where are you?
Mrs. Ant, can't you see me here? Well, you're looking at me as though you've gone blind. Mrs. Ant. Mrs. Ant. Mrs. Ant.
No, I'm not blind. I can see everything. The tree, the grass, the whole park. But you've gone. I can't hear you anymore. I can't see you. Mrs. Stewart! Mrs. Stewart!
You remembered, didn't you, Dorothy? You're not afraid.
Oh, Ralph. You're here. But I can't see you. It seems as though I can feel your hand on mine. But I can't see you.
I'm right here beside you, darling. Always beside you.
You've been gone so long, Ralph.
I'm always beside you.
But I haven't seen you. I haven't been with you before.
Dorothy. Dorothy, darling. It can't be for long this time either. They're coming soon. They're on their way now.
Who, my dearest?
All of them. Don't forget the others. They'll be here. Don't forget the others.
Why can't I see you, Ralph, when I want to so much? I can still feel you. It seems though you have your arm around me. Oh, Ralph. Oh, Ralph.
I'm here, though. Right here with you, my darling.
Why didn't you let me know before that we were so near to each other?
Because you had to come a long way to me first. And now it's time for you to know it, certainly. You already know why.
Are you here to protect me? You are. You are, I know it. But from what, Ralph? From what?
Dorothy!
Mrs. Sand! Oh, thank heavens, Mrs. Sand! You are, aren't you, Ralph? You will protect me. I'll come back to see you here, Ralph. I'll come back. Ralph! Where are you? Why don't you answer? Oh, Ralph, where are you?
Dorothy, it's all right. Dorothy, can't you hear me? Can't you see me?
Yes, Dorothy. Do you feel all right? Mrs. Stewart.
Oh, Mrs. Ant. I ran and found Mr. Paul as fast as I could. You stood there looking straight at me and you wouldn't answer me. You didn't even see me when I put my hand up in front of your face. Oh, you gave me an awful fright.
Mrs. Stewart came running for us. She said you seemed to have gone into a trance.
I came as soon as I could. She's all right now, isn't she?
Yes, now she is. But it certainly is strange.
Not strange at all. In fact, rather to be expected.
Why, Mr. John, Mrs. Zant hasn't ever had anything like that before. You didn't even see how she was. Mr. Paul here can tell you.
Why expected, John?
Oh, perhaps the air in the laboratory upset her. Perhaps something she ate. Who knows?
Soon, after a short break with us, we'll return to the Weird Circle.
Yeah, strange how things happen in these stories here. It's a weird thing, I guess, because this is the Weird Circle.
Weird it is, and wonderful at the same time. And it's a good story, Dave. You picked a good one for us to start things off.
It's a good gothic type tale for us to enjoy. You know that. There's so much that radio can do that, you know, in the movies, when we got into the 70s and all those slash movies, I know you like some of them, but there's some that you didn't care for as much. But, you know, with radio and things like this, you know, it's purely up to your imagination as to how how it carries out. And, you know, much like Hitchcock didn't want you to see her literally being stabbed and laying there on the floor bleeding, just showing the what looked like blood going down the drain was so much more horrific what we could create in our minds than ever he could have shown.
Yeah. If done well, the less is more. If done well, less is more when it comes to gore.
Yeah, these are all very well acted shows. Many of them were classic tales on top of that. That way they didn't really have to pay for the story. They just had to pay for somebody to adapt it to a half hour or a 22-minute radio spot, you know?
Yeah. And see, 1944, this is such a good year for a story like this because, you know, some of my favorite films came from that era. You know, some of the Universals, even the Inner Sanctum movies with Lon Chaney Jr.
Yeah.
I think of Evelyn Anchors, and that always makes me happy. And I just thought she was a beautiful woman. Not as good as Maria Ospenskaya, but a beautiful woman nonetheless.
Put your tongue back in your mouth. Yeah. Put your tongue back in your mouth.
I practice saying Ospenskaya often because you never know when you may have to say it. Apparently, I said it once too often. So,
because no one else will or can, for that matter. Yeah,
that's right. Let's return then to the ghost touch from the Weird Circle. It's weird.
The shock of Ralph's passing away hasn't really left her yet, has it, my dear?
I think we're imagining things.
I'm afraid that perhaps the food my cook has been serving has been a bit rich these past few days. I spoke to her about it this morning.
You all right now, Mrs. Zandt?
Oh, quite all right, thank you. I think we'd better go down to the beach.
I'll come along with you, Dorothy.
If you'll excuse me, I must get back to the laboratory. My dog has been acting rather strangely in the last few minutes. Something very interesting may develop. Will you excuse me?
Certainly, John. We'll be back shortly.
Don't hurry. Dinner won't be ready for a while, and that's all you need to be back for. I'll see you later.
Dorothy, I don't like this at all.
Are you afraid of something, Paul? Mr. Paul needs this funny spell you just had, and I agree with him. It was very strange, but it was very wonderful.
Tell me, Dorothy, you know something about chemistry. Would it be possible for John actually to do what he says he has done?
Well, there are a great many strange things that can be done with chemistry, Paul. And I believe, yes, that a mind bent on such an insane purpose could probably develop such a combination.
But wouldn't it be very dangerous?
You're thinking of that spell I just had in connection with it, aren't you?
Well, he did say some strange things there in the laboratory.
And you may be very right, too, Paul, in suspecting him. I may already have been...
Dorothy!
Oh, Mrs. Sand, no. Please, let's go home today.
But, Dorothy, if you think...
No, Paul. Something happened when I was standing under that tree. I talked to Ralph.
But, Dorothy...
And I promised to go back to talk to him again tomorrow. You see, I have to stay here now, because I must talk to him again.
It isn't possible.
I may be in great danger, Paul. Even this minute, here with you on this sunny beach, I may be very near to death. But I want to see whether what I believe is true. Because perhaps I am so close to death that the spirit of the man who loves me can reach across the narrow space that divides us and protect me. If that is so, I will have discovered more than 1,000 insane experiments can prove. You see, I have to stay now.
But, Dorothy, hasn't he protected you already? Hasn't he warned you?
No, Paul. He's waiting for something. Something else. I think I know what.
Didn't he say?
No, but there will be more. He told me to come back. He wouldn't have done that if there weren't more, would he?
Shall I have the main dish brought in? Are you both ready? I think you'll find the dinner very good tonight. Since I spoke to the cook this morning, she... Oh, here it is now.
Are you sure you feel well enough to eat, Dorothy?
Yes, thank you, Paul. I feel very well now.
The afternoon must... Oh, Rogers, I believe you've mixed the plates.
That one is for Mrs. Zant.
That's all right, John. I don't believe I'll have much dinner anyway. I'm not very hungry. Give Dorothy mine.
But I insist. Dorothy's is really quite special.
I... Listen. Oh, listen.
Is something wrong, my dear?
Oh, it was nothing.
But, John, does it really matter that much?
Perhaps John has had something special prepared for me, Paul. That's very nice of him, and it will be quite all right.
Thank you, Dorothy. We scientists seem to understand each other, don't we?
Dorothy.
It's all right, Paul.
At this dinner and going to bed early tonight, we'll fix Dorothy up splendidly, Paul. Wait and see.
Suddenly, I had felt Ralph close to me again. It gave me a new confidence, a knowledge that whatever happened now, I was protected. I tasted nothing strange about the food, but I hadn't noticed anything in the meals before either. Ralph was waiting, I was sure now, until John became bold enough to spell his own destruction. The next afternoon, nothing could have kept me in the house. John had been in the laboratory all morning. And when I looked in, I noticed with a shudder that one of the operating tables was covered with clean white sheets. I went quickly out to the tree where I had been with Ralph the day before. It seemed a long time before I again felt that strange, numb feeling, as though my life had almost left my body. But...
Dorothy, my darling, you are here, under our tree.
How could I help coming, Ralph, when you promised that we'd be together again today?
I didn't promise, my dear. I couldn't promise that much. But remember, my darling, I am always near you.
Ralph! Ralph, where are you? You aren't here anymore! What was that? I'm frightened, Ralph! Look. The grass is all beginning to burn and turn brown. Our tree is withering. Ralph! What was that? That great black mass coming toward me.
Dorothy!
John, where did you come from? I can only see your face staring at me out of that awful dark.
It's all right, isn't it, Dorothy? You're going to be all right. Oh. You said so last night. And you know it's true, don't you?
What's true? I don't know anything now. Where's Ralph? Oh, John, why are you fighting me this way? Ralph! Ralph!
You're going to be all right now, aren't you, Dorothy? All right now.
You're all right now, aren't you, Dorothy?
Which one of those spells again, Mrs. Zant? I'm frightened.
Oh, Stuart and I came out to walk with you, Dorothy. We found you here again, just standing here, not seeing anything.
I'm going to call Mr. Paul. I don't like this. It frightens me. Mr. Paul will know what to do.
Shall we go back to the house, Dorothy? You'll feel better in a minute.
No, John. Let's just wait here a minute. Mrs. Stuart will be back with Paul.
But everything is ready at the house. I have some work waiting.
But, John, I... That darkness all around you. I can't see anything but your face again.
You will follow me back to the house, won't you, Dorothy? That's it. Of course you will.
Yes, John. Of course. I'll come with you. Everything here is brown and burnt. Park is grown so withered. It's horrible here now.
Come on, Dorothy. We'll go slowly. Come along with me. One step. One step. That's it. Come along with me.
Look at those birds over there. They're such big black birds. And they're falling, dropping right into the sea. What's the matter with them, John? Why don't they come up again?
Don't be afraid of them, Dorothy. Just come with me. One step. One step.
And look. Those awful things. Snakes. Huge ones. And they're not moving.
John, they're dead. Nothing here ever stays alive anymore. Oh, it's hot. It's hot. It's burning hot.
It doesn't matter now, Dorothy. Nothing will hurt anymore. One step. One step. Here's the door. The door to the house. Wait. Wait while I open it.
But John, it's open. It's open and it's all dark in there. So dark I can't even see your face anymore. John, where are you?
Right here, Dorothy. Come up the stairs. One step. One step.
But everything is so confused. I can't find the stairs. I can't find anything. It isn't real. Everything is mixed up. I've lost something. I've lost something I can't remember.
We're almost there, Dorothy. One step. One step.
I can't remember. It was... Ralph! Ralph! Ralph, where are you? I'm afraid. I'm alone here in the darkness. There's no one here. Even John has gone away now, and there isn't any light. Ralph! Oh, Ralph. Oh, Ralph, you are near me. I can feel you here now. I'm not alone.
It's near now. It's almost time, my darling. Here, let me hold your hand.
I can feel your hand on mine, Ralph. But I still can't see you. It's so dark in here.
Come on, Dorothy. The stairs are there. One step. One step.
Oh, Ralph, your hand is helping me along. Hold me tight.
In here, Dorothy. Right in here. This is where we'll work, isn't it?
It's the laboratory, Ralph. This horrible, evil-smelling laboratory. Ralph, I'm afraid. Why don't you speak to me?
Now we're all right, Dorothy. Now we'll work together, won't we?
I'm thirsty. I'm so terribly thirsty. That heat. The pot is so hot. It's all burned up. I'm thirsty.
Here, drink this, Dorothy. This will cure your thirst. You'll be all right. Nothing will hurt anymore.
I'm not afraid now, Ralph. I'm thirsty. Why can't I have a drink? It'll be all right.
That's right, Dorothy. Drink this. Let me hold it up to your lips.
I'm so thirsty. I'm going to... Don't let go of me, Ralph!
What's got him?
He's choking to death. Something's strangling him.
John. John. He's dead.
Oh.
He was just holding that glass to your lips, Dorothy, when we came in, and suddenly it shook out of his hand as though someone had grabbed hold of his wrist. A powerful hand.
It was like as if a ghost had reached out and knocked that glass out of his hand.
Someone did, Paul. Ralph.
But no one was here. It couldn't have been...
Oh, Mrs. Zan.
I was protected. I knew I would be. Ralph was able to reach across and save me, Paul. I know it.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought you The Ghost's Touch. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
What did you do now?
I climbed up the pole during the break here and flipped a switch. I don't know. They don't seem to be too happy with me in the neighborhood.
Go to sleep.
I tell you, I saw a ghost.
Go on. Ghosts, spooks, skeletons, chit stuff. There are no such things as ghosts.
I think he was screaming for his life just a few moments after that comment.
I think he was. But, you know, even though it was a well-told tale, we still just may, maybe, able to learn something from it.
Well, first thing I'd like to learn is where I put my sound bite. Eerie House Radio proudly and somewhat sadly presents A Garrulous Moral of the Story.
It's Apologies to Gar. If a ghost is inviting you to become a ghost yourself, tell him to bug off and get a life, but not yours. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm thinking my first instinct, if a ghost says, come with me, I think I can make better use of my time. Thank you very much. I had other plans. They don't include going with you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I would think that would be, yes. Yeah.
Going with you was not yet. Just, I hadn't, it wasn't, I'm not doing it.
you got other plans. Yes, you do.
In fact, I believe the Reaper and I recently had that conversation again.
And you got away with just a few marks on you, huh?
Just a few. And you know, when you get older, stuff heals a hell of a lot slower.
Oh yes.
But if you're a ghost, you can heal instantaneously.
That's right. Because you don't really get hurt that. Unless somebody tells you to bug off and get a life, you know, then that hurts a little.
Yeah.
That hurts.
That's something.
Yeah.
Say that to a ghost. Get a life. Oh man. That's below the belt.
Get a life, but not mine.
Yeah.
Yep.
Get a life. I had one once.
Ghosts have been great in the movies too, when they're done right, you know.
Yeah. Here's a non-ghosts movie that has ghost in the title. Have you hosted Invisible Ghost? I'm thinking you did.
I have not yet. Yeah, which one?
Ooh. That's a Lugosi.
Lugosi, yeah, I have not.
There's a ghost, and there isn't. Let's put it that way.
Very, very, very early on, I was going to. I thought it was interesting. I just didn't find the right way to tie it into a location.
That's true. You're the location man.
Yeah. Is that where they get the flowers, they die on their wedding day?
No, that is the heck is that one? He has the vertically challenged fella in the one you're mentioning.
Oh, okay.
He
was in quite a few movies with Bella, including the one with the Bowery Boys.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And his name escapes me, but good actor. He was in a number of things. What's the one with the? I think that's the Something Bride. Is the one you're thinking of?
Maybe, or
Something Corpse. Maybe
I should do that. I should do that in a big florist shop. That's what I should do.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, just don't smell them or you'll be dead. if you're the bride.
If you're the bride, yeah.
If you're the bride. There you go. I'm a spoiler alert. Spoiler alert! Since it's been a while, Dave, why not do the clock next?
Yeah, that's cool. Going back to... you know, something we don't get here a lot of programs from ABC, they just, and what's odd with ABC didn't have a whole lot of money. That was the original NBC, I'm thinking it was the Red Network or it's the Blue Network, whichever one they sold off, ended up becoming ABC. And ABC just didn't have a whole lot of money. It's kind of like the owners of the Cleveland Indians. And so what they had to do is they allowed people to transcribe shows. You know, they did it all the time during World War II. Well, the ABC let them do it, and then they would play them at a specific time. And so you think that there would, because so many of these were transcribed. Like, you know, there was like, the Fat Man was on like 5 years. We've got like four recordings, and they were all transcribed. They were all shows that were put down on the album that were sent out to stations. And yet we only got about four or five of them that actually survived. It was absolutely crazy. Anyway, The Clock is narrated by good old Father Time, a 30-minute anthology program. It was created by Lawrence Key, first broadcast in New York with Clark Andrews as director, featuring New York radio talent. Then beginning in March 4th, 1948 episode, ABC ship production to Hollywood. And William Spear, boy, have we heard his name so often from Suspense and so many other great programs. I think he also did Sam Spade as well. Anyway, that's after he did that right after he left radio's Outstanding Theater of Thrills, Suspense. He took over The Clock. So there you go.
And a good show he took over. So let's start with The Lively Ghost. Ooh, this ought to be good. And what is our broadcast date on this one? Do we got it?
We have one from January 12th, 1940 and 7.
Sunrise and sunset. Promise and fulfillment, birth and death. The whole drama of life is written in the sands of time.
We present a new series of radio programs, The Clock.
Seen a ghost? I mean a real, honest-to-goodness phantom, complete with translucent bedsheet and staring eyes, surrounded by a sickly greenish glow. Have you? Well, I've spent many a night in my niche above the sexton's bedroom window, watching the acres of tombstones in the graveyard below by the light of the silvery moon, checking off the witching hours without so much as even seeing a bony hand or chilling to the anguished wail of a tortured spirit. However, ghosts do exist for some people. Only to them it's known as retribution.
It's good to get out of the city, isn't it?
I'll say it is.
You don't know what these afternoons mean to me, Vera. You don't know how insufferable it is for me to see you only once a week. Vera.
Yes?
How long must this go on?
How long must what go on?
Seeing each other on the sly this way. It isn't fair to either of us.
Just what do you want me to do, George?
You can get a divorce. If you tell your husband how we feel about each other,
Do you think I'm out of my mind?
Is it too much to ask?
You're very attractive, George. The last 2 months with you have been interesting.
Interesting? Is that all it's meant to you?
You know, it's meant a lot more. After all, he does have money, and a great deal of it.
Sometimes you frighten me, Vera.
Do I?
You're so cold-blooded. About us.
I'm afraid you don't completely understand me.
Perhaps I don't.
I hardly know my husband. We met 2 months ago, and we were married inside of a week. Then, unfortunately, I met you.
Unfortunately? Is that how you feel?
Oh, Frank's unattractive. He's dull. But he's given me what I've always wanted. Beautiful clothes, home that other women envy. I could have been happy with Frank in a boring way if you hadn't come along.
Then I have made a difference.
Oh, a big difference, darling. I'm madly in love with you.
Oh, Vera.
What's your driving, darling?
Oh, Vera, we've got to do something. We can't go on this way.
That's what I've been thinking. Sooner or later, he'll get suspicious. And he'll divorce me. That won't be so good.
Why not?
Because he'd cut me off without a cent.
Oh, is that all you think of, money?
Oh, I also think of you. Very often. how nice it would be for us to see each other all the time, not just a few hours each week.
Well, there's only one answer.
Yes. It's not what you imagine. Why stop here?
What do you mean? It's not what I imagine.
Well, I've planned it very carefully, George. All I need is a little help.
Help? For what?
To kill my husband.
Well, but, Vera, you're out of your mind.
Am I? All right. Forget I ever mentioned it. If you're not man enough to face facts, it's just too bad.
But murder...
Oh, it's easy, I tell you. The way I've planned it's perfect. No one could possibly find out. It's so simple, it makes me wonder why I didn't think of it before.
Oh, no, Vera. That's out of the question.
You won't even listen to what I have to say?
No.
Then turn round and let's go back.
But you're asking me...
My husband's got money, George, and a great deal of money. We'll go away together, Paris, the tropics, just you and I. And we'll really live.
Live? With that on our conscience?
Conscience? You talk about a conscience. Your conscience doesn't bother you much when you see another man's wife.
Oh, you can be cruel when you want to be.
I know what I want, and I take it when I want it. Ought to realize that by now. I tell you, I've got a plan for the perfect murder. It can't miss. We'll be absolutely safe. You can either listen to me or take me home for good.
What kind of plan do you have?
I can't understand why you insisted on our driving upstate today, Vera. I was looking forward to having dinner in town.
But I know the most wonderful place, Frank. It's only a few miles from here. The city's been stuffy lately without you.
Oh. Did you miss me while I was away?
Like mad.
Sweet.
Now keep your eye on the road, darling. We don't want any accidents. Make a right turn up there, dear.
But we're on the main highway now.
Follow my directions, darling, and we won't get lost.
You're the doctor. Vera, it's true we haven't been married very long, but I must say you haven't shown much interest in my past.
Do you have any deep, dark secrets?
Well, not exactly. It seems to me that a wife ought to be just a little interested in a husband's background and his family.
But you told me you hadn't any family.
Well, as a matter of fact...
Frank?
Yes?
Look at that poor man standing in the road waiting for a lift.
Oh, hitchhiker, apparently.
Well, let's give him a break.
I don't usually like to pick up hitchhikers.
We can't pass him up. My conscience will be absolutely haunting if we do.
All right. You certainly do have your whims. Like a lift, mister.
How far are you going?
Oh, just a few miles up the road.
Oh, well, a few miles will help.
You can get in the back.
Thanks, lady. I'm on my way to Albany. I haven't had too much luck on the road up to now.
Must be tiresome waiting for people to give you a lift.
Oh, I don't mind. I've been doing it for quite a while.
Sorry, we're not going much farther.
That's all right. I appreciate it anyway.
Oh, Frank.
What is it, dear?
Stop the car.
Stop? What for?
Look, I think I've made a terrible mistake.
What's the matter now?
I haven't been up this way in so long, I'm afraid I made you take the wrong way.
There's a farmhouse just behind those trees.
I'll go in and ask if we're on the right route to the New England Inn.
Never mind, dear. You stay where you are. I'll go.
Oh, be careful. There may be brambles.
I'll be all right.
Quick. Get into the front seat, George.
Oh, dear, I can't go through with it.
Are you turning chicken-hearted on me?
I've never even seen you before. How can I kill a man?
You'll either go through with this or so help me, you'll never see me again. Don't you see how simple it is? We've checked everything thoroughly, haven't we?
Yes, but...
We know that farmhouse is deserted, and there's rarely any traffic on this road. No one in the world could possibly suspect...
It's coming back.
Stop the car.
Vera.
If I knew how to drive, I'd do it myself. Stop the car, you fool.
No one at home in that farmhouse. Hey, what's the idea?
Hit him.
Where are you going? Hey!
Vera.
He's lying on the road behind us. Back up.
What?
Back up over him. You've got to. Just make sure he's finished.
I can't, Vera.
You idiot. You're ruining everything. Back up, do you hear? All right. Stop the car. Look at you. Oh, get out and start walking. Leave the rest to me. For heaven's sake, pull yourself together when you go back to town.
I'll try.
It's finished. The rest is easy. Aren't you glad now that you listened to me?
Mrs. Bascom?
Yes?
I'm Detective Haynes, Police Department.
Police?
I'm very sorry to trouble you this way. I know what a difficult time you're having, but there are one or two questions. Routine.
I told everything to the motorcycle policeman when he found this.
Well, you were so hysterical at the time, he didn't quite understand you. That's why I'm here, to verify the facts.
We were driving north, and we were supposed to stop off for dinner at the New England Inn.
That's why you were on that side road, is that it?
Yes. Near the farmhouse. One of the tires blew out.
Yes, we found the nail.
My husband left the car to investigate. The flat was in the back. The car was on a hill. As he bent over behind the tire, the car crushed him to death.
What did you do when the car began to move?
I can't drive, but I pulled at the wheel, and the car slid into that ditch where it was found.
You touched absolutely nothing inside the car except the wheel?
I told you I couldn't drive, officer.
Yes, we know that, Mrs. Bascom. Those circumstances made it necessary for us to investigate every aspect of the case. I guess the handbrake could have slipped. It's happened before.
Handbrake?
Well, we found the handbrake on, but not completely set. I'm afraid Mr. Bascom was a bit careless, and carelessness of an automobile is not very healthy.
If you have any more questions, please get them over with.
No. That's all I wanted to ask you, Mrs. Bascom. Well, I'll turn my report in and mark it accidental death.
Vera.
I told you not to come to the house so soon.
No one saw me, Vera. I just couldn't stay alone by myself. I had to have someone to talk to.
All right. Sit down and relax. You look terrible.
Vera, is everything all right?
Of course everything's all right. Could be better. The police have closed the case. They even felt sorry for me, the poor dears. They were sweet.
Well, then, we have nothing to worry about?
Nothing at all. It was perfect. No one in the world could suspect us.
I'll feel better after a while. Give me a few days to straighten myself out. I'll be all right, Vera.
What you need is a drink.
Yes, I could stand one.
So could I. The funeral was a terrible bore. Thank goodness it's over. What do you have, George? Scotch or rye? George?
Scotch. It's snowing outside.
It started when I came in.
I like the suburbs very much. Let's live here, Vera, when we're married.
Anything you say, darling. Will you take it straight? George, I said, will you take it...
Vera.
What is it?
Vera. Come here.
What's the matter with you?
Out there. On the road.
What?
I saw him, Vera. Standing there, in the snow.
George, will you make sense? Who did you see?
Your husband, Vera. I saw your husband.
Some kind of fun. Remember, kids, you can't spell slaughter without laughter. Spell it out.
Oh, my. I was not expecting that one.
Yes.
Yep.
Ew.
And it's just funny how right at the very break here comes in the ghost.
Yes, and we'll return to see what happens with this here lively ghost. Hey,
nice crowd there tonight, Dale, in the chat.
Oh, good heavens, yes. Fogsbane, GGSI Paper, good old Bob, CW, thanks for joining us as well. And you're just in time because we're right in the dead middle of our scheduled programming, so we probably ought to pay the bills, Dave.
Oh, we should. Okay, hang on. Let me get that. Here we are. Got it right here, ready to go, because sometimes these bills just don't pay themselves. I tried it before. It doesn't work. You get people calling your house all the time.
Yeah, that's true. And let's get a little ambiance going here for our new sponsor.
Yes.
Are you on a diet and you feel the breakfast cereal companies have left you behind?
Then you would be right, because none of the cereals out there are made for you. None, that is, until now.
Well, that's right, because the sugar-coated cereal company of America has finally come up with a breakfast cereal just for you, Ghost Toasties.
Not only is Ghost Toasties a diet food, but it's also a favorite of the spiritual sect.
That sounds dirty. Ghost Toasties isn't a diet cereal because it doesn't have calories. It's a diet cereal because it disappears before you can swallow it. No digestion, no calories.
And you'll never leave the breakfast table feeling bloated or overstuffed because you didn't actually eat anything.
And if you're really needing to lose weight, why not eat a bowl of Ghost Toasties for lunch, too?
And for all you fast eaters, you won't even have to chew your food because it disappears in your mouth before you even have the chance.
So stop by your favorite cereal aisle and get a box of Ghost Toasties. And get it fast because they're just flying off the shelves.
Ghost Toasties is another fine product of the sugar-coated cereal company of America.
Okay, there we go. Thank you, Ghost.
There we go. And now we can pay for another week. All right.
Yep. We're hanging in there on a wing and a prayer. Here on Eerie House.
Yes.
Do you have any favorite good ghost movies, Dave? Like, I don't know, Patrick Swayze, anything like that?
I mean, that was a very good movie, but I can't say that's my favorite, but I thought it was a unique story. You know, I don't know. I kind of lean towards some of the fun ghost stories more than that. Ghostbusters, I thought was a lot of fun. And the original one, the second one wasn't too bad either, but the first one really was, I think, the best of all the different ones. They got a new one coming out now again, I guess. All new younger cast.
Did you like the movie adaptation of Casper?
I did like the first one. I didn't really catch any of the other ones after that. I thought it was very interesting what they did with that, because of course Christina Ricci was in that, and she was fabulous. She's great for those creepy roles, but it was fabulous, I thought.
Yeah. And
just like Pinocchio, for a short time, he got to turn into a real boy. Whoops, another spoiler alert there. Too late.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was kind of interesting that they gave Casper an origin. You know, us as kids reading the Casper comic books, we didn't even think about that. That it was once a living person, which is the nature of the ghost thing.
But yeah, I read the Casper books, and Wendy the Good Witch and Spooky is not so nice cousin. So,
hey, some great mentions from CW, The Ghost and Mr. Chicken, The Ghost and Mrs. Mueller, both the movie and the TV show.
Yeah, the movie especially, I thought was very touching. That's probably one of the few of the serious movies with a ghost that I really enjoyed. That is, CW, thank you for reminding me of that film, because I do really enjoy that film. And the series was okay, but I really liked the movie. So
it was very, very special. And we are halfway through the clock, The Lively Ghost. Let's wrap this one up. We got more radio for you coming.
We got a whole lot of radio.
Yep. There's the clock.
From the beginning of time, there have been those who tried to compare the human mind with some well-made machine. And perhaps it's true, for the workings of the intellect are as delicate and as intricate as any mechanism could possibly be. There is one essential difference, however. A machine has no conscience.
Get hold of yourself, you fool.
He was standing there, Vera. I swear I saw him.
Frank is dead and buried. There's no one on that road, and there wasn't before.
Your husband...
Oh, for heaven's sake, George, stop talking like a child. Your nerves are getting the better of you. You need a little rest.
You think it was my imagination?
If you'd just be calm for a moment, you could answer that question yourself.
Yes. Yes, you're right. I didn't see anything, really. Oh, I don't know what's happened to me, Vera. I feel confused, afraid.
What's there to be afraid of? A ghost?
Don't say that.
Oh, really? George, how can you be so ridiculous?
I'm going home.
Wait. You're in no condition to go home alone.
Oh, I'm all right now.
Look, I'll drive into the city with you. We'll use Frank's car. What you need is a little relaxation. Your nerves are going back on you. Tell you what, we'll go somewhere, some bar where we won't be recognized. I'll get my coat.
Vera.
Well, what now?
Nothing. Go ahead and get it.
Want to sit in the booth?
I'd just as soon stand at the bar.
All right. I'll see you in just a minute.
But where are you going?
I've got to make a phone call. Frank's partner. What's the matter with you? Must you jump at everything I say?
Well, I'd just as soon you wouldn't leave me for long, that's all.
Mama won't leave you, not if Mama can help it. Now snap out of it. Order me an old-fashioned.
1 OB, sir.
Oh, 1 old-fashioned, 1 straight rye.
1 old-fashioned, 1 straight rye.
You've got quite a few people in here tonight, haven't you?
Yes, we always fill up about this time, sir. I haven't seen you in here before, have I?
No, I don't think you have.
Mister, you feel okay?
Yes, I'm fine. Why?
Well, you look kind of pale.
Oh, I had a cold for the past few days. It took a lot out of me.
Now, what you need is a rotten rye. Let me fix one up for you.
No, a straight rye's fine.
I tell you, this can't be beat. I even take it myself when... Hey, what's eating you, mister?
That man at the end of the bar.
What man?
Tell him to go away. He's dead, I tell you. Tell him to go away!
Mister, for the love of Mike!
What's the matter, George?
Vera.
Is this guy your husband, lady?
He's all right. Just nerves, that's all.
I saw him again, Vera. I tell you, I saw him
George,
again.
George, for heaven's sake.
He was yelling about some guy at the end of the bar. There's nobody up there but a cashier.
Here. Thanks for your trouble.
Much obliged, lady.
Vera, I swear I saw him.
Shut up.
You better take him home, lady. He's in bad shape.
He's had too much to drink. Take my arm, George. Must be quiet. You sure you're able to drive?
Yes, I can drive.
Well, that was a pretty mess, I must say.
You still don't believe I saw him? You
must be going out of your mind.
Maybe I am. Maybe that's what's happening to me. I don't know.
George?
Well?
Do you know the penalty in this state for murder?
What are you talking about?
Would you like to see us both get the chair?
Don't talk nonsense.
Just keep on acting the way you have been. That's all we need. Just keep on seeing things. I'll both end up in quick time.
Oh, don't talk that way.
Maybe you're not worried about your own life, but I'm worried about mine. I planned this thing without a hitch, and now you're whining and slobbering our way right into the arms of the police.
But why don't you believe me, Vera? He was standing there. I staked my life on it. He was standing there watching.
And what else did he do? Ruffle his wings and play a tune on his harp?
Why? I can't make you realize.
But you've seen a ghost? Who do you think you're dealing with, a fool? Are you going nuts or me? Your imagination's running you ragged. You've lost your nerve and you're whimpering like a puppy.
Well, I'm only human. What do you expect me to say and do when...
When what?
Oh, let's not talk about it anymore, Vera.
But we're going to talk about it. This is serious. If I hadn't come back to that bar when I did, you might have said just a little too much. As it is, I'm scared stiff. That bartender might get suspicious.
Oh, he won't remember us. We've never come to this part of town before.
You and I have got to come to an understanding, George.
What do you mean?
Either you learn to control yourself and act like a man, or I can't take the chance of seeing you again.
But you couldn't leave me now, Vera.
Couldn't I? You'd be surprised. When my own life is at stake, baby, I can do anything.
I'll be careful from now on, Vera. I promise I will. Only don't go away.
You've simply got to take hold of yourself and forget that Frank Bascom ever existed.
Oh, if I only could.
You can and you will.
Vera, let's get away.
Get away where?
Anywhere, even for a few days. Let's leave town. If I could only get out of town for a while, I know I'd be all right.
Maybe that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, suppose I drive back to my apartment and get some things, and then we can drive to your home and pick up what you need, and we leave.
You mean tonight?
I've got to get away, Vera. I can't stand here any longer. I'll go crazy if I do.
I picked a fine lover. What have you got running up and down your spine, jelly?
Vera, will you do as I ask?
It doesn't seem to be much choice.
I'll be all right in a day or two. You'll see. A different atmosphere, a different city. Look, we can drive south. Maybe make Miami if we try. It's only 2 days' drive if you keep at it.
Miami wouldn't be bad right now.
No one will know us there. We can swim and dance and pretend that nothing's happened. What do you say, Vera? How about it?
All right. But I don't see any reason to start at this hour.
We can stop over in Washington or someplace like that, but I've got to leave right now. I've got to, Vera.
Turn around and drive back to your apartment. We'll leave for Miami tonight.
You don't believe in ghosts? Well, neither did Vera and George until... But listen as the clock moves on.
I'll park over here and run upstairs. It'll only take me 5 minutes at the most.
You sure you don't want me to go up with you?
That isn't a good idea for the hotel clerk to see us together.
Oh, don't tell me you're getting smart at last.
Now that we've decided to leave, I feel 100% better, Vera. I'm beginning to feel like myself once more.
Keep up the good work. I'm liable to start liking you again. Hurry now.
I will.
Good evening, Mr. Bailey.
Good evening, Harry.
It sure is snowing, huh?
Yes.
There's a gentleman been asking for you. He's waiting upstairs. He's been waiting a long time.
What? What does he look like?
Oh, about this tall, thin, 45 maybe. Ah, there he is now, coming down the stairs. He wanted...
No. No, it's him. I've got to get out of here.
Mr. Bailey.
George, what is it?
He's in there.
Who?
Frank.
Are you crazy?
Oh, Joe Clark saw him, Vera. He's waiting for me upstairs.
Did you see him, too?
No, but the clerk did. He told me he did.
How do you know it wasn't someone else? It could have been someone else, you know. A friend might have dropped in.
It was Frank, your husband. I know it was. But we'll get away. This time we'll make sure to get away.
George, you're driving too fast. The streets are slippery.
I'll get away from him if it's the last thing I do. Vera, look behind us.
What?
There's a car back there. We're being followed. I can see him through the glass.
George, be careful. Slow down and let me out of here.
If this is it, I'm willing to face it. I'm tired of being hounded. We'll get away from him now or never.
You're doing 70, George, for heaven's sake.
70? I'll do 80. I'll fly if I have to. So help me out.
George, no! Stop it! Stop it! Stop it!
What a mess.
They were going pretty fast, officer. I was right behind them. They're both unrecognizable. I tried to reach them, but I couldn't. But I could see they were both dead.
Callahan, get hold of the morgue.
Right, sir.
Yeah, just one stupid driver after another. One of these days, some people will get it into their heads that a motor car is no tricycle.
The roads were slippery. And they're in a hurry.
Yeah, looks that way. Well, let's get the facts. You the only witness?
Yes.
We'll need you to testify.
Very well.
Better give me your name.
My name is Bascom.
Bascom? Yeah, it's funny.
What is?
I ran into another case the other day. Guy in his car. His name was Bascom, too. Frank Bascom.
I know.
What do you mean, you know?
Frank Bascom was my brother. My twin brother.
But wait, there's more. Or there's 50 seconds of silence. That was the last. Yeah, there's going to be silence now.
There it is.
Oh, it was
there. There you go.
There we go.
Insert commercial here.
George and Vera as recorded by the clock. Yes, retribution can be a ghost, and a lively ghost at that. And its bony finger can be a substitute for justice.
A clock will be heard again next week, same time, same station. It is written by Lawrence Klee and stars Hart McGuire as the clock. In this program, you heard Nigel Lovell as George and Margaret Christensen as Vera. Others were John Tate as Detective Haynes, Don Crosby as Frank, and Gordon Glenwright as Bascom. The Clock, directed by John Saul, is a Grace Gibson radio production.
It's 6 o'clock.
You know what's always disappointing to me on this show, though? You know, this is hosted by Father Time. And to me, Father Time has always been portrayed as this really old, ancient guy, you know? And yet,
yeah, this guy sounded kind of lively.
It did sound kind of lively for Father Time, you know? If you can control time, you ought to be a little older than that. I'm sorry. What I'm also sorry about is that there can be something learned from this story as well.
Ha! I was ready. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
We, it's apologies, Degar.
And everyone else.
If you think you see a woman's dead husband, talk to him. He may be wanting to thank you. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Walt Disney. The Disney police will be after me in just a few moments. No.
They will be, oh. Yes.
I got so much use out of this album as a disc jockey, Dave. Oh, especially around Halloween time.
That was the Haunted House album, right?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. It's been used in a lot of things. I've heard it used in, I don't know, perhaps films.
Yeah.
These particular screams. Which are somehow pleasant and calming to me. I don't know why. I get a strange satisfaction.
Pleasantly calming?
From this,
wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Soothes my nerves.
Okay. Nerves of steel.
Or brains of spaghetti, one of the two.
Dale has nerves of steel. I have nerves of rust. There we go.
Yes. Never confuse courage and intelligence. The two rarely go together.
They do not. Yep. Oh, I guess I confuse CW. That's okay. I confuse a lot of people, CW.
Oh, God.
All right.
I just had a horrible thought flash through my head, you know, because all this burn stuff is peeling like a sunburn, and I'm having a flashback to the Austin Powers Gold Member.
No. Dale,
that's a good one. I think I'll keep that
Dale's
one.
Dale's had two recent accidents, and one was with a cup of coffee. Where he got second-degree burns, at least. And he didn't even go to McDonald's to get it. I'm telling you.
No, I had no one to sue but my stupid, clumsy self. It was pretty bad. It was bad. Aloe vera is my friend. Aloe vera is my friend.
And you could sue yourself, but you wouldn't really get anything, you know?
Yes.
And then just cause yourself to go to bankruptcy for the same thing. Yeah.
Yes. Meditation with the Wilhelm scream. That's right, CW. Also very calming, very relaxing for me. I loop it and play it at night.
Yes. Yeah. Dale goes to sleep listening to that. Yeah.
To the Wilhelm scream over and over and over.
Yeah.
So weird.
Luckily, he Bluetooths it, so otherwise his wife would have made him a ghost a long time ago.
GGSI paper wrote that they thought it was a good scream. Was a requirement for an eerie horror host. And do you know the best horror host scream of all? I'll bet CW knows.
The best horror host scream of all.
Yes. The very best horror host scream of all. It was a shriek, really.
Horror host shriek.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to give it away here with a clue. Not actually a horror host, but a horror hostess.
Yeah, you lost me too. Everybody's everybody's stumped.
Yes, Fogsbane must know it because he said her famous line, and so did CW got it. That was Vampyra. She would say, "Screaming relaxes me so." She was a dark, dark character, Dave. There's not a whole lot of Vampyra out there, but you got to see what you can see.
And she really was the first, what we know of, horror host.
Yep.
We'll call it horror host or hostess. It doesn't matter. Host is kind of gender neutral, so we can say horror host. And
if you like horror hostesses, in particular, I believe it was Penny Dreadful, maybe, wrote a book. Or was it Misty? Did Misty write that?
It was Misty. Misty wrote a book, yeah.
Misty wrote the book. That's right.
Yeah.
She was kind enough to mention myself and my old partner in that book.
And Gar the Ghoul, I think, got mentioned too, he said.
Yes. Well, it has to be. Gar's a huge Misty fan.
He is.
Yep.
Yep.
A great gal. I had the good fortune to meet her a few times at a place you're going in just 2 weeks, Dave.
Yes, I are. Yes, yep. I are down to Cincinnati and Horror Hound.
So. Yep, Dave is going down in Horror Host history in the Horror Host Hall of Fame. Got inducted, yeah. Inducted and voted in. So there you go.
So looking
kudos, partner.
Looking forward to my trip down there, and it's nice to get out of town once in a while.
Yeah, get out of town. Get out of town.
That's what everybody tells
me
all the time. So I'm finally. Everybody tells me, "Oh, you get out of town." So I'm finally going to do it. Yeah.
And take Mike Mace with you.
Yep. I'm taking Mike Mace with me, and
I know
we have actually we've been down there twice, and each time it was twice. Maybe it was only once. I thought it was twice.
Well, you've been there once that I know. I think it was the last time I was there.
May have been. But
if memory
serves, we'll be there for the festivities and whatever else happens or doesn't. And
yep.
We'll turn around and in my absence, I don't know if I should tell or not, Saturday I definitely won't be here. So the gracious CW has accepted to sit won't be in my chair because she's got a much better chair than I do, to sit in her chair and be here with you on Erie House on that Saturday, September 11th. Everybody, you'll want to stick around for that. You'll have CW and Dale without my interruptions.
Oh, stop. But it's going to be a real treat working with CW again. She's a frequent flyer / caller / love that. I'm in such a dark mood today. I don't know why. Maybe it's all the ghosts.
That, or maybe it's you had some of that dark roast coffee again.
Not the dark roast, just a little bit of instant to get me kick-started as we ramp up our regularly scheduled radio. We might sneak in some goodies. This one's called The Ghost in the Garden from one of my favorite shows, Inner Sanctum.
Yeah, and this is one of the Armed Forces rebroadcasts, would have been also called the Armed Forces Playhouse. So you'll, unfortunately, because of that, we get none of those great commercials for Lipton's Tea or whoever was sponsoring them at the time, or the pills, the little blue pills that make you do things that you have to do sometimes. We won't have those. Because it was yeah. Is she blue? I don't know.
Carter's little pills.
Yeah.
Little blue pills.
I don't take them regularly.
yes.
Oh, my. Better start the show.
Yeah, we should. The Ghost in the Garden from Inner Sanctum, and this one is from
February 10th, 1947.
Good evening, creeps. Tonight, your Mystery Playhouse presents Miss Leslie Woods in An Inner Sanctum Mystery, titled A Ghost in the Garden. Now we're at your door, Mr. Host, so open it, won't you?
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host, inviting you in through the squeaking door. Come on in. Join our happy little community. And if you're not very careful, maybe you can stay. It's happened to some of our nicest people, and believe me, they've never regretted it. As they always say, it's a place to rest your bones. Remember, ours is the only community that has no taxes, no housing problems, no inflation, and no politicians. Of course, it might seem a little dead to you, but That's the idea, isn't it? Suppose we get down to brass tacks. And I do mean the ones that go around the edge of a coffin. Huh? So don't sneer. I've heard better jokes myself. But remember, he who laughs last laughs best. And brother, when we in the inner sanctum laugh, we're laughing last. Meet Laura, a nice girl in her 30s who had an uncle and worried about it.
It was a pleasant life at Green Tower. It was pleasant being mistress of the huge, time-worn house and the fertile acres that surrounded it and the money that came in regularly. Always. It was pleasant being married to Tony, who was very handsome and very gay, and who, they said, had married me for my money. Well, perhaps he had, but he was fond of me anyway. I'm sure he was, even though he was younger than I. But only a very little younger. It was a pleasant life. Until Uncle Edward came home. Tony had gone out to the village, I think, to pick up something or other. I was alone. Tony, the door is open, darling. You know I never lock it. Do you have a nice time buying things, Tony?
And who, my dear Laura, is Tony?
Oh, Uncle Edward.
Yes. But I haven't returned from the grave, my sweet.
I didn't think you had. Hello, Uncle.
That welcome could very easily be warmer and still not be overwhelming. I've been away a long time. And for a change, Green Tower seems attractive.
Does it?
Which is rather a pity.
What do you mean?
Selling it.
You're not going to sell Green Tower.
Oh, yes. Yes, I need the money.
Uncle, you can't sell Green Tower.
Well, it's mine. Of course I can sell it.
But...
And who is this Tony?
Tony is my husband.
Oh, really? Well, my congratulations. And I take it he thinks you own Green Towers.
Yes.
And thinks you have money as well.
Yes. Uncle, I...
Shh. I thought I saw someone in the garden.
Uncle, please.
Be still. It's so infernally dark out there, I can't see. Might be some burglar fellow.
He was standing with his back to the room, peering out into the garden. Uncle Edward, who had been away a long time and who had come back at last to shadow my life. He was not a very big man, my uncle. And when I came close to him, I realized that he was barely as tall as I. Uncle.
I can't make out a thing. Blasted shadows.
He was looking out into the garden for an imaginary burglar, while I stood behind him with the old French paper knife my mother had left me. I tried again. Uncle, please.
Now, it's no use, my dear. No use. Go away and stop bothering me.
He didn't even turn around when he said that to me, which made it quite easy when I... Oh! The knife went in smoothly.
Oh.
It kept on going into his back until I thought it would never stop. But the handle balked. Uncle Edward's body stiffened for a moment and leaned back intolerably against the knife.
Oh.
He groaned.
Laura.
And he fell. After a moment, I bent over him. He was very silent. As silent as the dark garden. As silent as death. My uncle had come home more than he knew. He wasn't very heavy. And he didn't bleed at all, which was nice. As I dragged him through the French doors into the softness and darkness of the garden. I hurried, because Tony would be coming home. The ground would be softest, I knew, under the rosebuds that I loved so. It was there that I dug a grave for Uncle. And it was there that I buried him. Under the lovely roses that would bloom again and again, not knowing or caring who lay beneath them. There was the sound of our car pulling up at the front door, but I was finished. Uncle was under the roses with a paper knife still in his back. And I was in the drawing room at the piano when my darling came in.
Oh, my love.
Oh, Tony, my dear. Mm.
Anything exciting happened while I was away?
No, Tony. No. Nothing ever happens here. Nothing. Oh, it's pleasant having breakfast in the garden, isn't it, Tony?
Mm-hmm. Except for, look.
Hmm? Oh, dear. Mr. Stowe.
Mm-hmm. Or Windbag.
Hmm. Well, he's a very nice old gentleman, but he does talk a lot, and...
Good morning. My, what a lovely sight you two make. Charming.
Thank you, Mr. Stowe.
Well, Laura, your roses are almost as lovely as you are.
Ah, they're much lovelier, you know that.
And where is your Uncle Edward this fine morning?
My Uncle Edward...
Well, Laura, you upset your coffee.
Oh, yes, I did, didn't I? That was very careless of me. Well, Mr. Stokes, I suppose Uncle Edward is still abroad.
Oh, my dear, I saw him last night here.
Here?
Well, on his way here, at any rate. I was driving. It was quite late. I saw him coming down the road.
Oh, it wasn't Uncle Edward.
No? No, well, isn't that funny? Well, I thought I could have recognized him anywhere.
It wasn't Uncle Edward.
Well, yes, of course. You know better than I, of course. Well, I must be getting old, eh? Well, that reminds me. Mrs. Stokes will have my head if I don't hurry back home. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
Who's Uncle Edward, Laura?
My uncle.
I could have guessed that.
Oh, yes, of course. I mean my mother's brother.
A poor relative?
Why do you ask that?
Well, you seem so upset when Stokes mentioned his name.
Oh, well, he is a bit. He sponges.
I wouldn't have liked him.
No, I don't think you would. So, isn't it lucky it wasn't Uncle Edward? That you, Tony?
Yeah, I'm going down the road to the cottage. You want to come along?
No, dear. I better go through this mail.
Ah, good old mail. Lots of checks coming in, huh?
Lots of them, darling.
Say, Laura.
Yes?
Well, why aren't you using your paper knife?
My paper... It needed cleaning, and I sent it away to have it cleaned.
Well, it was a pretty thing. Glad you haven't lost it. But I thought I noticed it around last night.
No, I sent it away a few days ago, when I went into town.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll see you later. Bye.
Bye, until later. And please, Tony, please forget about my paper knife. Please, Tony, forget about it. Hello.
Hello. You'd be the niece, huh?
The niece?
Mind if I come in?
Well, no, not at all.
Very nice.
We like it.
Yes, you do. Now, where's Ed Cheney?
Ed Cheney?
You can tell him his old pal Thrale is here in waiting.
Oh, well, I'm afraid you've made a mistake.
What kind of mistake?
There's no Mr. Cheney here.
Look here, my girl. This is Green Towers, isn't
yes?
it? You're Laura?
Yes?
And tell your Uncle Ed I'm here and waiting.
Well, he isn't here.
He got here sometime yesterday. Asked me to come here today. But I'm here.
I'm terribly sorry, but he's away. He's abroad. He is not here.
Oh. Hmm. He owes me some money.
Oh, he does.
Yes, 5,000.
I see.
I don't care whether I see him or not. All I care about is the money.
But I
wait for him.
Well, you
can't. You told me he was coming here yesterday. Today hasn't come. No, I'll wait.
Oh, well, it might be very awkward. Suppose...
Yes?
Suppose I gave you the money.
Yeah, that'd be all right.
Then you would go away? You wouldn't wait for Uncle Edward?
I'd go away.
All right, I think I may have it here. I always keep quite a bit of cash around. Expenses, you know.
Yes, yes, I do have it. And here you are, Mr. Thrale.
Thanks.
Well, you didn't count the money.
I trust you.
Thank you.
You know, I like this part of the country.
Do you?
Yes. And I've just changed my mind.
What about?
Going away? I'm getting on in years. Maybe I'll spend the rest of them here.
You said you'd go away.
I did, didn't I? That was before you gave me the money.
Well, you can't be very long on that.
There'll be more, won't there, Laura? Well, I'd better be running along. Find myself a nice place to live near the village.
But, Mr.
You see,
Thrale...
I know your Uncle Edward did come here last night. And he didn't owe me any money. I was trying to get a job from him.
Oh.
But this way is even better. Au revoir.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Gents, getting late. I'll be gone. My new little gray home in the west, eh? Nighty night.
Good night.
Old man Thrale will be back, though. Buy all the drinks you can stand. Hey. I see you. Good dark. What you want? I said what? Don't just stand there looking at... Hey, that knife. What are you doing with that? No! Don't! Oh. I can't...
Go.
Ouch.
Didn't say ouch. Ghost in the garden. This is
a stab happy ghost.
Yep. And this is one of the better Raymonds. For Inner Sanctum.
Yeah, what was it? Was it that this is a this is Paul McGrath.
Yeah.
Paul McGrath. He's your second favorite one. Yes, he is.
Yeah. Yep. Another great radio horror host. There should be a radio horror host Hall of Fame, or the horror host Hall of Fame maybe want to consider recognizing radio stars.
Well, you know what? That's an interesting idea, considering that, you know, the television horror host got their kind of their stick of being doing fun with it, like the. And it's like the Hermit did, like certainly, you know, Inner Sanctum and Raymond and the other one, yeah. Mr. Host.
The Hermit. There's a bunch of them. Old Nancy.
Yeah, Old Nancy. Yeah, they all
can't forget Old Man.
But you know, I didn't want to, but you know, really the horror hosts in general take their cue from Raymond because. He was the first one to really add some mirth and fun to the horrorness of it, you know?
Yeah, he was the one to first play up the camp, I think, to that level. I mean, your Nans, your cave, you know, Hermit Cave, they were more just straightforward. I'm a creepy guy, here's a story.
Right.
Where these guys were...
You know, but if you're going to consider those two...
Made it fun.
Right. If you were to consider those two horror hosts, you'd have to consider Arch Obler a horror host.
Absolutely. I think in the same way, the non-costumed horror hosts like Bob Wilkins and Big Chuck and Houlihan, yourself.
Yes. Yes. It's only because I couldn't get a costume to fit. Sorry. Oh, my.
Yeah, I got a face for radio, so I'm going to keep doing stuff here for the time being. It's way too much fun.
But there's a lot of guys, you could even talk about, you know, in the Book of Fate, the guy who handled the books and
the librarian in the other in the crime club, and
sure,
even the Father Time there in the clock, you know. They were characters that showed up every week to introduce the show and to close the show out. And that's, if that
Rod
isn't
Serling
the
and
idea
and Alfred
before,
Hitchcock should be considered as well.
I guess you could consider that. The few tales were horrific with Rod Serling, although because they were with real people and it seemed like it could really happen in most cases.
True. I just kind of favor that concept because of the EC Comics could also be considered horror hosts in a manner of speaking, in my opinion.
Okay.
You know, you could look at those characters like the Crypt Keeper and the Old Witch and even the Warren magazines,
yeah,
like Uncle Creepy and Cousin Eerie. Those characters were horror hosts. They brought you tales, and in the spirit of the original Raymond, were very campy about it.
Right. I can't think of anybody who was campy about it before that. And once again, we owe that to the great talents of Hyman Brown, who created that program. And we'll have another wonderful program of his Mystery Theater tomorrow night, a wonderful eerie tale tomorrow night, which I'm sure we'll get into in a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah, we will discuss that and do shameless self-promotion a little later. Let us wrap up the Inner Sanctum, The Ghost in the Garden. We'll be back.
Well, you're all here waiting, eh? What's the matter? You brave or something? Oh, you are. Then suppose you crawl out from under that sofa and listen to the tale of Laura, who planted her Uncle Edward under the rose bushes in the garden with her favorite paper knife in his back. A Mr. Thrale tried to blackmail her, but one dark night, Mr. Thrale lost interest in worldly matters, lying down in the street with a knife in his heart. The next morning at Green Towers...
Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, darling. Got a breakfast already?
I'm too hungry to wait. Pull up a chair and go to work.
All right, I will.
What's the matter, Laura?
Nothing.
You're a bit pale.
I'm all right. Tony, who put those roses on the table?
I did. They're blooming. I know how you love them.
Well, thank you, darling.
Say, terrible thing in the papers this morning.
Oh? What?
Man stabbed to death in the village.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Stranger hereabouts. He was at the village bar, throwing a lot of money around. Walked out. Somebody evidently wanted the rest of his money, so he got a knife stuck into him.
Oh, how dreadful. What was his name, Tony?
It was a funny name. Hard to remember. Oh, yeah. That Thrale. Yeah, that's what it was. Laura, what's wrong?
Oh, no, nothing, nothing. I do think, though, that those roses have given me a headache. Their odor's so strong.
Oh, that's a shame. Well, I'll get rid of them.
Oh, will you? Thank you. I'll go lie down for a while. Maybe my head will feel better.
Yeah, you do that.
Yes, I may even be able to sleep again.
Laura?
Yes, sir?
Stop wandering about the room.
Oh, I'm just a bit restless.
Get your paper knife back from the cleaners yet?
Paper? Oh, no, not yet.
It's taken him an awful long time, isn't it? Hope they haven't lost it.
I hope not. Tony.
What?
There are no roses in this room, are there?
Nope.
Well, then why is the odor of roses so strong?
Laura, I'm worried.
Why?
Because there is no odor of roses in this room.
Good night, Tony, darling.
Laura, are you sure you don't want me to stay with you at night?
No. Run along to your own bedroom.
You're not looking well.
I'll be all right.
Well, yell if you want me. Good night.
Good night, Tony. Good night. I'll be all right if Only the roses will go away. A heavy, sweet odor of roses always in my nostrils. The deadly, decaying odor of roses always in my
nostrils. What? What? Oh, for goodness sake, I was asleep. And it was... There's nothing. No. No. Oh, no, I don't hear anything. I... The voice is coming from the garden. From the garden. I've got to get out of bed and see. I'll just see. Now, there's nobody in the garden. Nobody at all. There's a plum tree just as it always is, and the vegetable patch, and the lawn where we play croquet, and there are the rose bushes, too. The rose bushes. And out of the rose bushes, a man is standing up, and it's my uncle! No! No! Tony, what did that doctor say? The consultant, I mean.
I don't know. He's stopping by in a little while.
He seemed a very strange man.
Well, psychiatrist, I mean...
I knew he was a psychiatrist, darling. Tony, do you think
of
I'm...
Of course not.
Because it's only that I smell roses when they're on.
You're not crazy, Laura, and for heaven's sake. That must be the doctor now. Now, you'll be a good girl. I'll see him, and I'll be back very soon. You try to sleep?
Yes, darling. But I couldn't sleep. The odor of roses was so terribly strong. I thought, well, perhaps if I got out of bed and lay down on the floor where the fresh air and the air conditioning machine were strong, perhaps there I'd be more comfortable. But... And for a moment, I thought it was funny as I crawled about a bit on the floor, on my hands and knees, until I found the place where the fresh air was supposed to come from. Then I began to laugh. And I laughed, and I laughed. That night I waited till he slept, and I went downstairs into the cellar. Straight to the air conditioning machine which kept the house so fresh. And there, in front of the blower which drove the air through the pipes into my bedroom, I found a little bottle. It was a lovely little bottle, with a crest on its little fat belly, and the words, Attar of Roses, on it. The bottle, you see, was open. And then I knew that I wasn't mad. And I also knew that the time had come for me to find my paper knife again.
I'm awake, Tony.
Ah, brought you your breakfast.
Thank you, darling. Put it down. I won't eat it just yet.
All right. Hey, you had a good night?
I had a wonderful night. Tony, I think I'm going to be well again.
Good.
Help me out of bed, darling, will you?
Sure, all right.
Just put your arms on me.
All right.
There, all right. I'm up. Oh, don't be in such a hurry to take your arms away, darling. Hold me close.
Oh, Laura. You...
Darling, I forgot to tell you.
What?
My paper knife came back.
It what?
Yes, I have it now in my hand. The hand that's behind your back, Tony.
Laura.
Yes, Tony, here is my paper knife. You can take your arms away from me now, Tony. It was quick to get Uncle Edward, but I think you'll die anyway, Tony.
Yes. Good doctor. Maybe this can. Maybe.
Oh, no, no, doctor.
Why?
I found the bottle of perfume you placed in the air conditioner that you were using to drive me mad.
Bad.
Bad luck.
Very bad luck, darling. You saw me kill Uncle Edward, didn't you? You were the one in the garden, weren't you?
Yes, saw you.
And then when Flail came, you knew about him and you killed him, didn't you?
Of course. Couldn't afford to have you give him money. Money. Who's going to be mine?
Oh, Tony, didn't you know it was yours anyway? Everything I had was yours. Why did you have to torture me and try to drive me crazy?
You would have cracked it. Then the money would have gone to... Yes. Uncle Ed. I played it safe.
But you didn't, Tony, did you? Play it safe. Because now you're dying. And when you're dead, I'm going to bury you with Uncle Edward. Right in the garden under the rose bushes. I've already told everyone that you're going away, and you are. But not very far. Although it's far enough, isn't it, Tony?
You've won.
Thank you, darling.
And you've lost. Listen. Know what that is. It's an ambulance for you.
Why?
You're mad. Yesterday, two doctors signed certificates of lunacy. I authorized.
I am not insane. I can prove it. The odor of roses is a fake. I can show them the perfume. I can explain it to them.
But how will you explain me or Uncle Edward?
I...
That's it, Laura. How will you explain her?
Tony! Tony! Wait! What am I going to do? If I prove I'm sane, they'll hang me. And I don't want to be hanged. But if I say nothing, they'll think I'm insane and they'll send me to the asylum, and I don't want to go to the asylum. And they won't go away!
End of poor Laura, who was a handy girl with a paper knife, but who didn't do so well with her spring planting. Oh, and while I amble down to Green Towers to find out whether Laura's spending the winter in a padded cell or at the morgue, let me give you a bit of earnest advice. Never plant your uncle in the rose bushes if you're allergic to pollen. You might get a bad case of flay fever.
Inner Sanctum has been a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, voice of information and education.
I'll bet from that one ad that Ghost Toasties are selling right off, flying right off the shelves.
They're flying right off the shelves, absolutely.
Yep.
Well, Dale, I dug deep into the story to find something yet else I could learn from it.
Just like that, Erie House Radio proudly presents another Garless Moral of the Story.
Yes, apologies to Gar. Choose your weapons wisely, for a paper knife will only kill an origami swan.
An origami swan. All right.
An origami swan.
Why not? We got some time left here, Dave. We got some time left. A little bit. Couple minutes.
Did you have a little tune? Did you have a little tune you threw at me earlier? Could we throw that in here?
I think we have just enough time. Something quite topical,
okay.
Actually. Different version there of the Casper theme.
It's, I don't know, that was creepier than Casper is.
Yeah. And Ooh. Even creepier yet, another ghost story tomorrow was the return
Ooh,
of
yes.
CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Yes, it's the Shining Man.
Yeah, and I was talking to Gar this morning, and I asked him what about this. He says, it is such an eerie tale, Dave. And so... a great eerie tale for Eerie House Radio on a Saturday night.
And that's tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern. Right here.
Yep.
The Shining
yep,
Man.
Yep.
The Shining Man. Does that mean we're going to have Scatman Crothers?
No. Nope. Nope. Yeah, that was the Shoeshine Boy, wasn't it? Chattanooga Shoeshine Boy or something like that. That Phil Harris song?
No, I was thinking of The Shining. He was the guy that was explained to the little boy what The Shining was.
Ah.
The ability to talk to
well,
dead
he got
people.
He got to explain a lot of things, didn't he? He got to explain in Twilight Zone, the movie, they redid Kick the Can.
Yes.
I think essentially that had the original, the way the original short story was written, that had the original ending to it. Rod's ending was a little bit different, where they all
yeah.
ran off and got kids. Where in this version, only the one. Again, a spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But I like both versions. I like both versions. And if I hadn't met for Scatman Crothers, I don't know if I would have liked it as much.
I would have loved to have met him. He had such a great voice. And, oh, gosh, I was even watching he played a small role in John Wayne's swan song, The Shootist.
The Shootist, yeah, that's right.
That.
I forgot it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Scatman Crothers. Hong Kong Phooey
yep,
himself.
And even in Hong Kong Phooey and a cat, and you're singing that wonderful song in the Aristocats, everyone wants to be a cat. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. He started out as a disc jockey, I believe. So that's something I haven't
really
with that young man. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes, he did. And, probably where he learned to speak so well and do different things with his voice and create characters.
So you started off as a disc jockey and worked your way down to Eerie House, huh?
Yeah. I'm just a fan of the Scat Man. Just a fan of the Scat Man.
And who isn't? Who isn't? I mean, come on, Hong Kong Phooey.
Actually, I never watched that cartoon. I started steering away from. I like more the superhero and the crazy Warner Brothers stuff. That was for me on Saturday mornings.
Yeah, no, I did catch him. I thought he was pretty funny in that.
Yeah. In any event, don't forget to catch us tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern, and with any luck, Gar will be healthy and return to Horrible Horror Styling Gar the Bull at 8:00. Right after our show.
That's right. About time bringing the one and only Vincent. So I just want to thank everybody for
in about 10
CW
seconds.
Fog
if my clock is
Rob
right,
Robert Jr. Yeah, I can't tell. And good old Bob and GGS Sci Papers and CW. Thanks all for being here.
Yes, we'll see you next week. All right, tomorrow. Bye bye.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left. But me and him. when next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Perfect.
Yes.
Just about perfect.
Doesn't happen very often. So that's what it does. Of course, in the afterbirth, nobody knows the difference anyway. So
no. Now, Ghost of Frankenstein had a ghost.
Ghost of Frankenstein had a ghost? Okay.
Yes, it did. It was Frankenstein. He appeared as a ghost Dr. Who was it? I don't know. It was another one of the mad doctors that kind of discovered secrets, tried to bring back the monster. That was the follow-up to Son of Frankenstein, I think, because if I'm not mistaken, Ghost also had Lugosi as Igor, who had something shoved in his neck.
He did.
His looks better. No, I think, because I had some soreness on my clavicle and my sternum, so when I, in retrospect, what I think happened and probably saved my butt was the stake probably hit that first and then drove up into my neck, but took most of the brunt of the fall, which is why it probably wasn't lethal. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're all glad for that.
That's healing up faster, actually, than the burns. The burns are going to stay with me for a while.
Yeah, they will. Yeah, I did that. I tell you what, I did that once. We had a hot air popper, and on top of that, it had the thing that melts butter. You know, the heat comes up and the steam goes up and melts the butter.
Yeah, you had
well,
that little tray
and then
you drips put
down
on top,
onto the
right.
popcorn. Yeah, yep. yeah. Well, this is kind of then you put a this one had one built in, and then it just had a butter lid on top of it. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So I was making popcorn, and I put the butter thing on there, and the practice wife said, "Well, yell if you need anything." At that point, I turned it over, and I didn't have the right top on it, and so the top flew off, and that hot butter.
Oh no!
Rolled down my leg,
ow.
And she said, "Yell if you need anything." And
yeah,
I
yelled
and screamed and said, and she laughed because you know she said, "Yell if you need anything." And
yes.
So she thought
and
I was
yelled.
Joking. Until I had second degree burns. Yes.
I forgot to tell you about a couple of weeks ago. We hit, I think, 59,000 overall listens here on the channel. Let me check the stats here.
59,000 overall.
Yeah, we should hit 60,000 by the end of the year easily. Easily at the pace we're going.
Wow.
That was a couple of weeks ago, and we're up to 59,215 overall listens. Now that is just what Blog Talk records. Dave is posting stuff all over. It doesn't count the listens we get to from the radio reading services.
No.
And other places. I highly question their tracking on this as to how comprehensive it is.
Yeah,
it could be undercounting. It could be overcounting.
We're coming right up at the this weekend. We hit number 195 of our one-hour version of our show.
Wow.
So,
that's a lot of radio.
That's a whole lot of radio.
It's a lot of editing. Jeez, Dave.
Yeah, it does take a few minutes. Because when we start off, we would only get one, maybe two shows in. Now we usually get, three shows or a full hour show in, you know. So it makes it interesting.
Now, Dave, you know that I've walked with some, you know, pretty well-known horror hosts. I was fortunate enough to work on the Ghouls show. I've got to, like you, got to work with Houlihan and Big Chuck. I didn't get to work with them all at once like you did. Get them back together after 40 years? That's amazing. You know that I used to be part of the Horror Host Hall of Fame induction team.
Yes.
And yes. Subsequently met a lot of people, Elvira, others. And I'm telling you right now, you are probably the hardest working host I know.
I don't know about that, but
the word indefatigable comes to mind.
I am truly honored to be there. I really am.
Yeah.
With the names that are bandied there, it's I'm not sure I belong, but I'll take it because it is a great honor.
It doesn't surprise me that you said that, which to me solidifies what I just said.
Yeah.
I've had the good fortune to meet a lot of these folks, and we're close to Misty Brew and others contributing regularly to my shared streaming channel with my old partner and just a lot of the greats. And I'm telling you, you rank right there with them. And don't feel that you don't deserve it and that you don't belong because you do. Nah.
I guess it's weird because, you know, I've gotten to work with so many talented people on the show and nobody gets anything, but we all have fun. You know, nobody gets anything out of this. We haven't made anything.
Sure you do.
But we have a lot of fun. Everybody can see it when usually at the end, I try to make sure there's time for some bloopers from that show at the end after the credits. And hopefully through that, people see how much fun we do have while we're doing this. And so many great, you've gotten to work with some of my cast, and they're just so many talented people.
Yeah, you have a knack of surrounding yourself with talented people, and yet you have enough mercy to put someone such as myself on your show as well.
Oh, please.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
But we're, that's what I say.
Sometimes, Dave, and I'm sure it's obvious, sometimes I just fly by the seat of my pants and let things happen.
You do, and I get nervous with that. I really do, even after all this time. Mike Mace has pulled me out of some of that. He's thrown things at me and said, okay, let's do this without a script, because we didn't have time to come up with a script because I got cut off from a location, and she just wasn't going to let me do it. I was going to do the place made dollhouses or sold dollhouses and dollhouse kits and things like that.
Yeah.
And I was going to do Terror of Tiny Town, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't want me to, she decided not to let me do it there because she didn't like the name of my show, The Weirdness Really Bad Movie. She said, well, couldn't you name it something else just for one show? I said, no, I don't think so.
Yeah. No, this is pretty much what you just tell them. This is what people know my show by, and this is what gets watched. You know, I appreciate your input, but no. but go to hell! No, I'm not kidding.
I guess the fact that I started laughing when she said that didn't help me any. But
no. Hey, they're not all hits, you know.
But this, you know, what's funny, I called Mike Mace and said, well, I'm not going to have a show. And this is when I really fought to have one show made every month. And I said, I guess I'm going to finally break my streak and not have a show in.
No.
And he said, so, and it was the middle of a snowstorm. It was a
Wednesday. Is that the one you did on the mound of snow?
Yes. It was a Wednesday morning. And Mike said, well, what do you got? And I said, well, what do you got for snow? I said, well, I got the snow creature and I got Snow Beast that we could do. He says, well, you know what? I remember watching Snow Beast. Let's do that one.
Sure.
I said, okay, well, this was Wednesday and it was February and it was a snowstorm. So Saturday, when we went to film it, it was 60-some degrees, sun beating down, not hardly a snow anywhere, to be found anywhere. Mike was out in Medina, and he found there was a Medina, the Medina Antique Mall there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a snowplow had piled this big pile of snow in the middle of the lot, and that's what we found to use to host Snow Beast without a script on it. So it just we chatted on the phone several times. We got there, we worked out a couple things, and then we just went with it. And the same thing happened when we did Ghost on the Loose, because Mike Mace had a bunch of goats at his house eating poison ivy, and he rented these goats. No, it's true. He rented these goats to come eat his poison ivy off his property.
Right.
Goats eat anything and everything. And it was a group called
Holland Weeds. Goats. A lot of people. Yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah. They're called the company was called Holland Goats, and so we went in there without a script. You know, the funny thing is Mike Mace is always the last person. I love the guy. But he's always the last person there. We shot this one at his house. Guess who was the last person there?
Mm-hmm. At his own house.
At his own house. Yeah. So I went ahead and did the interview. And
what I think makes me less uncomfortable, I mean, there's always a level of discomfort when you're doing stuff without a script or without a 100%, you know, verbatim script in front of you, is one thing that always keeps me going, Dave. Keep this in the back of your mind, is you can script, you can plan, you can have the best stuff. You can be Spielberg. But sometimes the very, very, very best stuff is unscripted. We've seen that in movies. One of the greatest scenes in, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark, when this guy's flashing a sword in front of Indiana Jones, you know, and it looks like, oh, my gosh, what's Indy going to do? Well, he pulls out a gun and shoots him like nothing. You're ready for this great, you know, confrontation, and it was cut short. And that was just something Harrison Ford came up with off the top of his head, and it played great, one of the best scenes of the film.
It did. Oh yeah, we play with things, and believe me, probably mostly because of me, we've never done a script exactly the way I've scripted it. You know that because you did the one there in the ice house. A part of that was because I think we all had brain freeze and said, "Come on, get out of here."
it was chilly in there in that old ice house for Blonde Ice.
But it was, you know, but we all had a lot of fun with that, and it turned out to be a really cool show. I get a kick. I never get to see him until I see him on the streaming channels like The Vortex. I don't really get a chance to sit there and watch them along with other people. What's funny is the latest one we did just premiered on. It was called a Weirdo Watch Party. And he's a guy that was a radio guy out of Illinois. And he's got a whole variety of things, including a regular podcast of ghost stories and unusual tales and things like that. So every so often he holds this Weirdo Watch Party, and he was, you know, there for the premiere of my our latest movie, the okay, now you got to make me think here. The Yesterday Machine.
That's the one you just said. Yeah.
And it was so funny because it's the first time those people that were there at that watch party had ever seen our stuff. And it was funny because he said, "Hey, Dave, your wife was really great in this. You two work really well together." He says, "Well, she's not my wife. She's my cousin." And he said, "You married your cousin.
Oh, from Kentucky, are you?"
I said, "No, my middle name isn't Jerry Lee, you know."
Yeah, there you go. Dave Jerry Lee Binkley.
So I got a kick out of them thinking that Kathleen was my wife. That was funny.
Oh, jeez. Well, that's a testament of how you guys play off each other, because, you know, she's been in a number of your shows, and she's quite talented.
Oh, yes, yes.
Just one of the many talented folks many, many talented folks you've had the opportunity to work with.
She's also an amazing writer on top of that.
My kids were pretty
blogs.
Good writers.
Yeah?
Yeah, they were pretty good. You know, I set them up with the general outline. Like, the way I wrote a show is I'd create an outline. All right, this is going to be the theme of our skits for the show. Sometimes they were directly related to the film, sometimes not. And their input for like gags and skits was just tremendous. We did a Monty Python spoof show once for no particular reason. It had nothing to do with the movie. What do we call it? Marty Cobra's Gliding Carnival. Marty, yeah. And so we kind of twisted some of their skits around. They had a dead parrot sketch. We did a dead chicken sketch. Yeah.
Okay.
And they did a cheese shop skit, so we did an apple shop skit.
Okay.
They were good at adapting, and they were very good at the concept of the spoof, you know, of making clever redos of other creative works. Pretty cool. Smart kids, sharp kids. Too bad they ruin their lives going to college and getting jobs.
Yeah, I know. But neither one of my sons really felt they wanted to step in my direction that I've done either. Except my oldest DJ, when he went to Ohio State, whenever he needed an easy, good grade, he went to do something that he, because he was there at the station learning from me all the time. So he did an introduction to radio, got an A on that. He did he did a one on script writing once, and you know, he said it was funny because, you know, he forgot or didn't have time to do it. So he got to his class about a half an hour early and sat down and took an idea and wrote the script out in that half hour. And the drama department chased him around for three quarters trying to get him to change his major over to theater and script writing, you know? So it's not that he couldn't have, but that's not where his passion was. So. So.
Well, Dave, I'm going to see if the old pup needs to go outside. At least I don't have to walk him anywhere now. I can just shoo him out
there
of the house.
We have a fence. There you go.
It's amazing.
There you go. All right. Well, it was a fun show tonight. We had some good stories, and I can't wait to share with everybody tomorrow night The Shining Man.
I'm looking forward to it, too. I always love CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And
This one will not disappoint.
They never do. Never do.
All right. Well, with that, there's no more to do but to bring in the one, the only, Schnozzola.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Monster sex and rock and roll.
Make me a sergeant, Jackson.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.